This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, David Prutton, in for Mark Clement, who's still away on his travels. That doesn't stop us from bringing you the biggest and best names to provide expert analysis on all the main talking points in the EFL this week. And with the transfer window slamming shut at 11 p.m. on Tuesday night, what a week it's been. Our first guest is the former Liverpool coach and Blackpool manager, who's currently adjusting to life in the capital, having been installed in the hot seat at QPR just before Christmas.
I went for a run the other day and I ran past Doctor Who, David Tennant. In fact, it wasn't until I got back in and then one of my coaching staff, he'd gone the other way and he'd seen him. And he said, "Did you see Doctor Who?" And I said, no. He said, "Yeah." And he described him, like, he had a bit of a beard, and so I didn't recognise him at first, but he went past me and I thought, oh yeah, it was him, yeah, I remember him now, yeah.
And Michael Brown will be joining me to cast his expert eye on all the big stories across all three divisions this week, plus reflect on all the deals done in the January transfer window, now that it's well and truly closed and the dust has finally settled.
Some great transfers, obviously some huge amounts of money. Spent, as we know, some people didn't get those targets and some people did quite well.
It's the official EFL podcast. Right, our first guest on the official EFL podcast this week is a man well on his way with his particular coaching journey. It's a journey that began at Crewe's Academy before joining Liverpool to develop their youngsters. Blackpool and promotion to the Championship followed. Then Villa in the Premier League is now curating huge dreams in West London with QPR. It's the head coach, Neil Critchley. Neil, welcome along. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, good morning. Thanks very much.
It's lovely to see you. Slightly, yeah, just to fill people in that are listening, wherever you're listening to this, he's now in his office, which looks very nice and calm and relaxed, whereas yesterday we had a little chat and it sounded like you were in the middle of a building site, mate. What was going on?
Yeah, we've been in a hotel for the last sort of 5 weeks and then we moved into a little house, myself and a couple of the staff, last week. We've had a few sort of traumatic experiences since we've moved in. We had a bit of a major water leak last week. The heating's packed up and yesterday, some workers decided that they were going to start banging on the walls very early in the morning. So I'm sure you heard it. Yeah, a bit of a and we've got no Wi-Fi either. So that's why we had a bit of a disaster yesterday.
The irony with that is it would normally be if a group of footballers moved in, people and neighbours would be raising their eyebrows. Not the coaching staff. You're meant to be the quiet, sensible, easy to get along with ones.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a nice area. It's a quiet area. But you could see when it was like it's me and the two of the coaches. So three strange men moving into a house. You could see all the neighbours suddenly appearing on the street and looking through the blinds and stuff like that, thinking, who are these people moving in here?
We'll put the address up later on, mate, so people can go and knock on whenever they need to have a word. You mentioned busy. Obviously, we've just come off the back of deadline day. What's that like as a boss for you? Is it a constant stream of wanting to take phone calls, wanting to miss certain phone calls with people that you want to keep? How does it pan out for you?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. It can be busy. Day before was not as hectic. We were trying to do a couple of things that didn't quite happen. A couple of our players left to go on loan or permanent to play elsewhere. So it wasn't as busy as what I've experienced previously, but we've done a little bit. We tried to do a little bit and it didn't happen, unfortunately.
Obviously, you've been there since December. Does that make it different to that situation where players are going? Because it's in the best teams, I'm sure, that you've worked with, there's been that real bond, there's been that real togetherness. But by virtue of only being there a relatively short space of time, would you get players coming in and out that would make it slightly easier for you? Does that make sense? In that kind of emotional sense, we all know there's a transactional nature of players coming in and out of a door, but you've always struck me as a coach that really kind of fosters relationships with players.
Yeah, and I always try and do, I obviously have to protect the club's interest, but I also try and do what I think is right for the player as much as I can. I want to try and stay true to my values and principles. I think that's how you get respected, the players, and mm-hmm. some of the players that have left, I think, to either to go on loan or permanent, I'm trying to do the right thing for them and their career, but also, you know, that has to be right for the football club as well. Yeah. And you're right, you know, you try and build an environment and a culture where you have complete respect between players and staff. And if you get that togetherness and that respect, then I think you're halfway there to try and be successful. Around January, that can always be quite difficult because silly season sort of appears from the 1st of January and agents get to work, and it can be an unsettling period for players and staff, and I'm glad it's over, to be honest.
So that's the window. We're now, obviously, we're nearly 2 months into your time at QPR. How would you assess it so far?
I've really enjoyed it from a personal level. You know, I've been really sort of really welcomed into the football club. It's a fantastic feeling around the training ground every day with the people that's here. I've enjoyed working with the players, but there's obvious improvements that we need to make. You know, there's been a little bit of change at the football club in the past 12 months. And I think when it's inevitable, when there's ever change of manager, there's always going to be a change in message or a slight change in approach. And it takes time for the players to understand that. And they've had a little bit to deal with from the summertime. So we've got work to do, but I'd be saying that if I'd been here 5 years, that's no different.
I think as well, given what I'd seen from performances, results from your words post-match to the Hull City game, for example, in the sense of just discussing what you're seeing, what you want. Sometimes that can be misconstrued, can't it? If someone's reading it thinking about, oh, harsh words from the boss, but the industry is built on that, isn't it? Honesty between players, management, staff and management. Look, this is where we want to be. This is what this game might have given us. There's obviously work to do. Is it a receptive bunch of players that you've got that can take that on the chin and get on with it?
I hope so. That's what you find out. That's what I'm learning about the individuals in the group all the time. If you'd have spoken to me last Friday or last week before the whole game, I probably would have been speaking differently. I think there'd been good signs of progress in the performances. Some of the draws that we had should have been wins, really. And those extra points would have made us as a club feel differently, and the table would have looked differently. But then, you know, that ugly performance last week makes everyone feel different. It's about always keeping things in perspective. And yeah, you're right. I just speak from the heart after the game. You know, I want to be myself, and there's never a bridge between, or there's never a gap between what I say in the dressing room and what I'll say after. I might water it down a little bit to the media, obviously. But no, I said the exact same to the players, and I'm then not going to say something different to the media after the game. That would be pointless.
The thing that always intrigues me about management, and why I have the utmost respect for people like yourself that put themselves at the forefront of that, is it's the fine margin. So take the two games or a couple of the games that we've covered on the telly. So it would be the Burnley game and the Sheffield United game. So in the Burnley game, it looks like there's a very, very early penalty, which doesn't get given. You know, it then goes on to goals being scored. You move on, obviously, and watching you there in the Sheffield United game with a deflected equaliser from Sheffield United in the 90-something ridiculous moment of the game. Over the course of when you are looking at a club, then coming into a club, then being involved in these games for the club, how as a manager do you manage to keep yourself on that even keel? Because that would be the thing that would infuriate me the most. You've done everything in the game. Your players have done everything in the game. Then an intangible comes swinging in, slaps you in the face. And like you say, that last-minute equaliser from a Sheffield United, you come away from that, you've ended their unbeaten run, you've won at home. It's hard to quantify where that pushes the team on. So to maintain that balance? How tough is that for you as the boss? Because everyone's looking at you, all the players are, aren't they, going, come on then, boss, how do we react to that?
Yeah, you're 100% right. It's very difficult, obviously, straight after the game, because you're emotional, you're passionate. I was hugely frustrated. I always give myself a moment or two before I speak to the players, and then you have to gather your thoughts quickly and think, how do you address the players in this situation? And that's where you rely on your staff around you, your experience, your instinct, your feeling. Obviously we're all sort of upset and angry, but I have to put myself above that sometimes. And that is extremely difficult. The results can determine your emotions. And I think I'd like to think that's one of my strengths, that I'm quite consistent in terms of my behavior. And I think the players then can learn to know what to expect from me. I don't think I'm too up and down. But that's, that's not to say also that I haven't got fire inside me. I'm sure the players would testify that after last week's performance at Hull. But again, after the Hull game, it was the same. You're disappointed with the performance, but it's a horrible day after the next 24, 48 hours. I go sort of within myself to start with. I'm quite quiet, but I'll then evaluate and then sort of come out of that a little bit and speak to the staff, and that's where I re-energize and draw my sort of strength from, ready to go again. And how you then deal with them situations is different, determined on how you're feeling and the performance. It's the process that's more important than the result at the weekend. I'm a firm believer that if you get the process and the culture and everything right during the week, over a long period of time, that's where you've got a better chance of being successful.
And the great thing as well with the Championship, the games are thick and fast, and you only find yourselves 5 points off the top six, which is, that's a good week in the Championship. Suddenly you're sat amongst the ones that have kind of raced the way up there. Borough have shown it, Luton have shown it, West Brom have got themselves flying up the league. A string of results gets you very, very close, if not inside the top six, doesn't it?
Very much so, That's the nature of this this league. It's unbelievably competitive. The margins are so fine between so many teams. And like I think you said it before, that the unpredictable nature of the game anyway. It's 11v11. There's thousands of decisions that is made on the pitch. You have a referee and you need a little bit of luck and fortune, but things can change very quickly. This group, I believe, are capable of putting some wins on the board. And if you do that, then the league and the feeling around the group changes very, very quickly.
Mentioned the league and the feeling. Is it a different feeling to what you experienced at Blackpool, given the fact that you brought them back into the Championship? And we're talking about a QPR team and a club that's got obvious aspirations of climbing back into the Prem.
If you look at sort of the recent history of this club or this group, then it followed a similar pattern last season. It was following a similar pattern before I joined the club in terms of the results. I felt that we were changing that a little bit before last weekend, and last weekend was a step in the wrong direction. So it's up to us to rectify that as quickly as possible, starting with Huddersfield this weekend.
I was going to say, it's another trip up to Yorkshire, isn't it? You're certainly getting the miles in early doors with QPR. Yeah. I mean, obviously, travel is just very much the nature of the beast when it comes to getting around the Championship. Any special kind of ways of doing it? Are you a train-based kind of club getting around from the capital?
Yeah, we try to be as much as possible, but because of the train strikes, that sort of interfered a little bit with our travel plan. So Preston, my first game away, took an enormous amount of time to get out of London and get up to Preston, and the weather didn't help. So that was a very long journey. This weekend, a train strike again, so we'll be on the bus up to up north, back up to Huddersfield, yeah.
Well, I can tell you, I'm not too far. It's freezing, mate. So you might think it's been cold down there, but it's just as cold, if not colder.
Can't be colder than the house I'm living in at the moment, mate.
Just picture you all there huddled together in your QPR gilets trying to stay warm.
Yeah, sitting next to the polar bears in our house, mate.
Don't worry, I'll write a strongly worded email to the hierarchy. Come on, you've got to look after your coach. Just the big differences living and working in London, given the fact that obviously you spent a lot of time up in the Northwest and obviously in Birmingham with Villa, is there anything particularly different? Is it somewhere that you always wanted to work, perhaps, in the capital?
Yeah, it is actually. Yeah, it's something that's always sort of intrigued me, and I've never really been away from home before. I've always worked in the Northwest pretty much, barring Aston Villa experience. But this is, you know, I'm all in. We stay down here all week. So my family's still back up north and we live in a really nice place. I went for a run the other day and I ran past Doctor Who, David Tennant. So
did you stop or did you give it the kind of whiplash one? That was David Tennant.
It was the whiplash one, yeah. In fact, it wasn't till I got back in and then one of my coaching staff, he'd gone the other way and he'd seen him. And he said, did you see Doctor Who? And I said, no. He said, yeah. And he described him like he had a bit of a beard. And so I didn't recognize him at first, but he went past me and I thought, oh yeah, it was him. Yeah. I remember him now. Yeah. He was going a lot quicker than what I was anyway.
I'd have been very tempted just to very, very discreetly arc my run and just kind of follow him for a bit and see where he ended up.
It doesn't happen where I live anyway, I can assure you of that.
That's what I've found as well, working down there. People can be quite blasé about that, whereas us northerners, like, oh no, but I definitely saw such and such.
Yeah,
walking down the street.
That's right, yeah. That if I realised who he was at the time, then I definitely would have changed direction and stopped and tried to catch him up. Yeah.
That'd have been amazing to see the QPR head coach chasing after Doctor Who down the street. Was he going quite fast?
Yeah, was it not a bad pace, to be fair? Yeah, he was actually, quite impressive.
I suppose from your point of view as well, and when I do speak to managers and head coaches, and I'm not saying it's a generational thing where you've got slightly older managers that don't necessarily care about keeping in good nick and doing the kind of fitness side of what it is, but I don't know whether you listen to music, but I presume that little block of time when you can literally put this down, your mobile phone, and go, no one's ringing me now for the best part of however long I'm doing this. Does that give you that mental break to kind of just clear your thoughts a little bit?
Yeah, and that's pretty much the only thing that I do really, if I'm honest. I used to play a little bit of golf, but I don't get the time really to do that much. So running, I try and do a little bit of running. Well, maybe if you could call it running, probably like a fast walk. But that's where you get a chance just to clear your head and put your phone down and, go and re-energize a little bit. So that's what I like to do.
David Tennant probably does the same thing to get away from super fans, but when he runs past people that keep pointing him, he's chewing.
Yeah, he destroyed my confidence, to be honest with you. He was going that quick. I thought, oh no, I just stopped and carried on walking, I think, after that.
But you got straight back on your phone and started texting your coaches.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, that was it, yeah. Speak to some agents instead, I thought. Yeah.
I can just picture you chasing him. It's making me laugh. So January's done. We're in February now. The end of the season, the running will be here before we know it. Given what you've seen from the team so far, the club so far, and what's happened in January with regards to players that you've got moving forward between now and the end of the season, is it as straightforward as top six being the aim for QPR and yourself now?
I'd like it to be, but my immediate sort of aims, if you like, are just to improve the consistency of our performances. If you look at both ends of the pitch, until Hull at the weekend, we'd become a little bit tighter, I think, in terms of conceding goals. We've had a few things go against us as well, and I know that can seem like spilt milk a little bit, you know, talking after the event.
I think, sorry to butt in there, but you know when you hear managers say that, and it's like everything, everyone's got an opinion on what a manager says or what or does it in a game. And having, and not saying it's like some kind of secret world that if you've not been in football, you shouldn't have a say on it. But it's really sometimes hard to quantify just what effect these things have. It's not a case of referee bash, because I speak to the refs all the time, and it is the toughest job. It's a thankless task. Then even more so, damned by the comparison of not having VAR. I mean, he's made that decision once, he's seen it once. He might have had his fourth official and the two assistants helping him out. So there's four of them. Whereas VAR's got so many screens, so many voices, and that's a different debate entirely. But these decisions that are made in the heat of the moment, I always kind of relate it back to if a referee makes a poor decision, if you pulled up a player every time he made the wrong decision, the game would never get going. Why did you pass there? Why did you pass to the wrong? Well, I didn't mean to. Well, obviously, I know he didn't mean to. So let's kind of get things going. So the referee is in no position to do that on purpose at all, but you have to pick up the pieces. And that's what I mean when I try to mitigate to people and say, well, yeah, that last minute equaliser, the confidence that you get from that, you can't quantify, because it could send you off on another run. It could beat you the next three teams because of what you've got stored as fortitude. So when you're saying that, I mean, it's tough, but it is a massive part of the game. Decisions are a huge part of what you've got to react to.
It's such a random game. You try to prepare during the week to take away, or I do, as much of that randomness as possible, because you have a plan in possession, out of possession, but you can't quantify for refereeing decisions or a little bit of luck, or somebody just does something, you know, a little bit out of the ordinary that you maybe don't expect. You know, like we were 1-0 up against Swansea, could have finished the game off.
Yeah.
And then they literally had one moment in the game and they scored. And because it was sort of the later period of the game.
Yeah.
It makes everyone feel different after the game. And you're thinking, that was a decent performance. We could have quite easily won that 2-0. And then they have one
more. Trying to pick the lads up instead of saying, come on, it was great. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things.
It was exactly that after the game. Yeah. No, it was exactly that. And I obviously have only been here for 7 games, but this run started before me. So
it was,
I think that psychologically they're feeling it for a longer period of time, and so the supporters, whereas I didn't feel that the same way after the game. But again, I suppose all that, the feeling in the dressing room and how sort of every interaction during the week helps me to build up a picture of where we're at as a group and what we need to do and how I need to help them.
But certainly as well, I mean, I mentioned where you've been before you've taken the reins at QPR. We spoke a while ago. It was in the promotion season for Blackpool, and it was the first time that we'd spoken. And it was such an insightful, relaxed chat from a man that struck me and a coach that struck me. Someone who's very composed, very confident in your process, and also understood the different facets now of what it is to be head coach, because you get people like me wanting to ask you everything, the far end of wherever, about processes and what the job's like. And you've always been an open book. Is that you as a person? Is that you as Neil Critchley's coaching kind of persona, or is that just you across the board?
I'd probably, if you spoke to people who know me, I'd probably think that was probably different from a personal life to football life. You know, I'm very comfortable in this environment because it's what I've always done for a long time. In my personal life, I'm probably quite private. I am. But I've just got to be authentic and be myself. I don't try to be someone that I'm not. I think, you know, if you try and take things from people that you've seen and worked with before, and I've been very fortunate to be surrounded by some outstanding managers and coaches and player developers in the past, and you try and take all the best bits from them. And I say I've been so fortunate to work with some outstanding people that you can't fail to learn from.
It's certainly been a journey so far that we've had a keen interest in. I mean, and when you talk about the relative youth of a coach, when you've been doing it since the mid-noughties, you've got a great and proper bank of experience there across an absolute kind of abundance of different places. Younger players, the Premier League, of course, getting promotion, the different players that you've seen in and out. Is that what the life of a career coach is now? Like submersing yourself in all the different facets of a football club, drinking all of that in, making sure that you know absolutely everything about how you treat an under-18s, how you treat someone coming to the end of the career. Does it all feed into each other?
Yeah, I think it does. And again, you know, I've been very fortunate to do that, starting, you know, way back when I was still a young pro, starting at Crewe in it was Centre of Excellence at the time.
Yeah.
Working, you know, from pre-academy all the way up to under-18s. And I did that for years and years and years, part-time, before I went full-time and then obviously to Liverpool. So I've sort of seen Crewe were League Two at the time, got promoted through the divisions up to the Championship, had a very successful period there. And then obviously went to see, you know, what it was like at Liverpool, working at the very, very top end, what it's like at elite level, back to Blackpool in League One. Then, you know, Aston Villa and back in the Premier League, I wanted to experience that, and now back to QPR. So I've had a whole different range of experiences, and you know, I think that's me. I want to try and have as many different experiences as possible, but also to enjoy where you're at and give your all to be successful and try and improve the club and the players. And that's what I always do, because that's my passion. Yeah.
Well, amen to all that, my friend. And this is something we're going to keep a keen eye on between now and the end of the season. It's going to be fascinating to see who's in the dust-up for the top six when it comes to those final knock-ins. Neil Critchley on the official EFL podcast, QPR head coach. Thank you very much for joining us, mate.
Thank you, Prutz. Thanks very much.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Our second guest on this week's official EFL podcast is a man born in the North East but forged in Manchester, beginning his career in the blue half of that wonderful city before crossing the Pennines for Sheffield United. He then headed south to Spurs, followed by Fulham. Back north he came for Wigan before Pompey came calling, rounding his career off with 3 years at Leeds United, then bringing the curtain down at Port Vale. And after that wonderfully exhaustive geographical intro, he's still smiling at me. Hello, Michael Brown.
Hello, how are you doing? You well?
I'm really well.
Hartlepool there as well?
I'm coming on to Hartlepool, mate. I don't know, it was early doors. It's part of our chat. And given that glorious CV of yours, and I say this without any hint of condescension, it's a list of clubs to be mightily proud of.
Yeah, very proud. Obviously, started at Manchester City, enjoyed my time there, moved on. And then you're wondering where your career is going to go. Someone actually once said to me, he said, try not to spend more than 2 years at a football club. Go and try all the different ones. Go and meet many people and test yourself. And after Sheffield United, I pretty much took that literally. 3 years it was on a few different clubs. But lucky to play for so many great clubs, Brooks.
Always leave them wanting more. I think that's what they say about West End Dames, don't they? I'm not saying that you're a West End Dame.
And I'm not saying it's wanting been... more either.
It was deadline day. That's come and passed. Another one boxed off. Were you working on it? Were you busy?
Yeah, I was. I was covering the transfer deadline late on deadline day night up until 11:15 when the deals ended at 11. A 15-minute update as well while they were happening after that. So some great transfers. Obviously, some huge amounts of money spent, as we know. Some people didn't get those targets and some people did quite well.
Well, we'll get stuck into that. Obviously, that huge amounts of money being thrown around in the Premier League, some seriously obscene figures. Let's talk, though, predominantly Championship based. The ones that stuck out for me over the course of obviously quite a lot going on the 31st. Harry Suter leaving Stoke to go to Leicester after a wonderful World Cup, of course. Axel Tuanzebe from United to Stoke. Joe Taylor went from Posh to Luton. Ben Pearson reunited with Alex Neil, left leaving Bournemouth for Stoke City. Mark Albrighton, Leicester to West Brom. Marquinhos, Arsenal to Norwich. Joe Anderson, Everton to Sunderland. Omar Akik, Arsenal to Wigan. Anis Mehmeti, a wonderfully talented player that I've seen a couple of times for Wickham. He's moved on to Bristol City. Aaron Ramsey, not that one, Villa to Borough. Duncan Watmore, Borough to Millwall. Marvellous Nakamba Villa to Luton, Nathaniel Chalobah, Fulham to West Brom, Josh Onoma, Fulham to Preston, Wesley Hoot, Anderlecht to Watford, Bailey Wright has gone from Sunderland to Rotherham, Enoch Agyei, Anderlecht to Burnley, Danel Sanane, Norwich to Wigan, and Carl Darlow will be keeping goal for Hull City after moving on from Newcastle United. Some really intriguing moves there. And one of the clubs that sticks out, given the kind of work that they've done, essentially all Brighton and Nathaniel Chalobah coming in, is West Brom. So they've given themselves one hell of a platform with Carlos Corberan, and now they've added two really quality players, haven't they?
Really good quality. I think when Corberan got the job, myself, me and you were at the game, weren't we, against Sheffield United. I wondered how he was going to go, and it was comfortable for Sheffield United. And he'd only been in really a couple of days, so you're wondering how he could get anything across. But after that game, I was worried about West Brom and how wrong I was. Yeah. Incredible turnaround results. Now Chalobah, Albrighton, I think, could make a big difference. Real positive signings. And just looking at the league table, they're sat in a great position, just a couple of points off the playoffs. And I think that'll give them another nudge in the right direction.
Key thing as well at this time of year is not only teams that have been able to accrue players, but ones that have been able to keep others' sticky hands off their crown jewels. I'm sure there's a better way of saying that. The likes of Sander Berger and Illiman Ndiaye for Sheffield United, given your connections with that club as well, Michael, they're the ones that stick out the most to me, because there was so much chat with these two, more so probably Berger than anyone else. Does it now feel being able to keep them in-house at Bramall Lane, that gives them a wonderful opportunity to press on from where they are, given the fact they're second in the Championship?
Well, at 11 p.m, I was actually quite pleased. I was wondering, is there going to be one of those late ones? Is something pending? And it wasn't to be. I'd seen a phone call from Fulham coming into the BBC building about a late transfer, and I'm like, surely it's not Sanderberg. Please not. Don't do that. Because psychologically, and obviously not being able to replace so late in the window, and obviously we've seen an embargo situation and things difficult in that sense for Sheffield United. And obviously, Illiman Ndiaye has been incredible. I was also wondering whether a particular Premier League club would come in with a loan-back type deal for somebody like that and say that was quite attractive for him to own him now. But I think that's really a plus point for Paul Heckingbottom and the games coming up. So, yeah, interesting that it didn't happen, because even in the August window, you felt like Sanderberg was going to go then.
Another one that was heavily coveted, and the fact that he'd come into the end of his contract, is Ben Brereton-Diaz at Blackburn. Signed a pre-contract with Villarreal to move there in the summer. They're currently fifth in La Liga. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because I think times have changed where you look at that and you're scratching your head, because you're looking at his career so far, the fact that in Chile is an absolute superstar. We've done games where he's absolutely lit the place up. It feels not only professional but cultural. It feels a way of broadening his horizons, as he's done with obviously playing for Chile as well. A wonderful, glorious part of Spain to go and live in near Valencia. Any misgivings at all that it's not a Premier League club that his next destination is?
Are you jealous by any chance when you look at that?
Very jealous.
That option to go and live there. I mean. That was some move, wasn't it, for him? An opportunity that life-changing, different cultures, you said, helping mature along the way. Obviously, Blackburn Rovers will miss those goals that he's developed over the last couple of seasons, and that push and the position that they're in. I think they're in a good place. I think the negativity around that won't help when you know the deal's done. You're not really getting any financial reward for that. It was similar for me leaving Sheffield United. Had a pre-contract with Rangers, already in the draw at the sort of 1st of January, and I just felt something's going to go wrong. You're sitting out for the remainder of the season. If you don't have a good game, and they're wondering, is your heart and soul in it? You're already looking somewhere else. It's so important the next few weeks for me that Blackburn Rovers get a couple of good results to try and get that momentum and just slip the way through. So very, very interesting story.
So how did you handle your particular situation when you found yourself there?
Well, it was, I did a couple of medicals. I've been up a couple of times to Scotland. And I just looking at family-wise, looking at the rest of the season, and I felt it would have ruined my relationship slightly with Sheffield United. Mm. I'd had a wonderful couple of seasons. Supporters now, looking in later life as well, Prutz, where now I still go back. Everybody says nice things. It's still really positive. So I just hope that that situation, people can see the bigger picture and it ends well. Do you know, in a real successful ending to the season. I decided against it at the very end of those negotiations with Rangers, and I signed for Spurs, which was going to be, the club was going to get some money. I could go straight away as well. And I think it probably made my relationship a lot better. Yes, it was sad to leave. Supporters weren't so much disgruntled when they realised there was a fee as well. So that's what I went with. So it's about him doing well to the end of the season.
So sliding doors moments, isn't it, in every player's career. Last touch on a non-transfer, Viktor Gyökeres staying at Coventry. And given as well, obviously, Coventry back another season of consolidation in the Championship, currently sitting 13th in the Championship. You get the feeling with that type of player, they'll come knocking again in the summer, dear, because he's a wonderful centre-forward.
It's not going away, is it? Do you know, as well, I did a programme at the weekend and I was thinking, are they going to hold on to him? Where's it going to be? And I just think you feel sorry for these Coventry supporters, what they've actually gone through. Mm. Obviously, ownership was sorted out at the weekend. I think that's just before the weekend. That's a real positive for them. So I think now, hopefully, there's a bit more normality in the football club that they can kick on, because I think Mark Robbins has done an incredible job.
Right, let's have a little look at the fixtures coming your way over the course of the weekend. West Brom Coventry, that kicks us off on Friday night. There's an early start on Saturday. League leaders Burnley are at Norwich. The South Yorkshire Derby also at 12:30 is Rotherham against Sheffield United. Huddersfield have QPR in town, and a resurgent Hull City face struggling Cardiff. High-flying Luton hosts Stoke, with also high-flying Borough facing Mick McCarthy and Blackpool. South London meets the North East at the Den. Millwall Sunderland is that one. It's Deepdale for P&E and Bristol City. Watford make the short trip to Reading, and it's Blues Swans in South Wales. Monday night sees Wigan at Blackburn. And I mean, the key thing that comes out of that, we've just mentioned Coventry, obviously, and Gyökeres. They're starting the weekend on Friday against West Brom. Luton was the other one that jumped out to me, Michael, given, I mean, we knew what a wonderful job Nathan Jones has done going back there. We wondered what was going to happen when he moved on. We saw Rob Edwards come into Watford, got flying out the other end, and he stepped into the breach there. And it's business as usual from what we've seen over the course of the last couple of seasons. But just how good a job is that, given where they are in the Championship? It's phenomenal, isn't it?
It is phenomenal. And it keeps amazing, doesn't it? The results they get. I do feel like, as well, it's a real difficult place to actually go and play, to be an opponent, to go up against them. I think that organisation, that determination, and I feel, I don't know how they do it, ultimately, do you know, at the football club. And that's me being, it's a respect that I have for them. And you look at the recruitment, you look at the players, you wouldn't necessarily say Luton should be at the top of the Championship. And I think Nathan Jones has put those foundations in really well, and it's continued. I think when you get a buzz in that dressing room, I think straight away you have that belief, and they seem to have it at the moment.
Speaking of belief, a team just above them by virtue of goal difference is Middlesbrough. They're currently sat third. So Luton, 45 points in fourth, Borough third on 45 points as well. Tubar Akpom, of course, they've got the top scorer in the Championship. I saw them against Sunderland the other week. Sunderland, to be fair to them, at Stadium, like, very, very good. They're obviously now going to have to try and do without Ross Stewart up top, given his injury. But the job that Borough's done with Michael Carrick, it looks at this moment in time like Burnley and Sheffield United look pretty well ensconced in the top two. But are we looking at a playoff mix-up that involves Middlesbrough, given how good they've been?
Do you know what, Prutz? I was at the game, actually, covered the game, Middlesbrough versus Watford at the weekend. Mm. And as a Sheffield United point of view, slightly biased towards them, I'm thinking, which team, which squad can go on and challenge Sheffield United? I'm looking at that Watford squad, the amount of injuries that they had. Yes, they've got some really good players that were available. And Savan Bilic thought it was a really poor performance, and he felt that was a game they could have gone on and won. And if they had of, I'm looking and thinking, they're going to touch Sheffield United. They've got an opportunity to push them all the way when they get those players back. And I was thinking, what type of Middlesbrough performance are we going to expect? I've not seen them. I'm wondering how Michael Carrick would get his team to play. And they were absolutely brilliant, Pruts. How they pressed from the front, great work ethic. Michael was driving them forward at every opportunity from the line. Really seems to be enjoying that role. And rightly so, with obviously the turnaround results. Obviously, they had a suspension. Paddy McNair came in, just slotted in really well. Transfer market, yes. They were obviously linked with Ramsey, Barleza to come in, and he was very coy about it afterwards. But at the top of the pitch, Cameron Archer, the way he actually stretched, got in behind teams, pace was frightening, and at Pom again, getting another goal. I think it was a real top performance. And, the experience of Johnny Howson, who we both know well, in the middle of the pitch, still going.
Still going.
And he still contributed. And at that point, they really changed my viewpoint of they are going to be right there till the end.
It's a key thing, as you quite rightly say there. You reference, obviously, Dan Barleza, wonderful footballer at this level. We mentioned Aaron Ramsey as well, but also with Cameron Archer. They've been able to really tool up in a very kind of discreet but quality way, haven't they, with regards to getting themselves from where they are now to hopefully get themselves back in the Premier League.
And you watch Michael Carrick and you see his interviews, and I was speaking to a few of the locals about him and said, yeah, he's very safe, he just goes about quietly. And I think exactly that. So when we got him, I started laughing at him straight away to say, come on, give me a bit more, you're enjoying it. You've got some coming through the door. And he sort of said, listen, I've got to enjoy these times. Dressing room's great. And, hopefully to get a few additions. He didn't want to commit, but it was obvious they were close on a couple. And, really impressive, wonderful turnaround. Can they keep that bounce going? He's obviously got good support, hasn't he? Jonathan Woodgate there helping him as well. And it was a pleasure to see. It was really on good atmosphere, but they played really good football. And I was wondering, is it going to be a slow build-up? Is it going to be patient?
Yeah.
But actually, it was really high-press, tempo, and they got right at Watford.
Which certainly does make for a wonderful last third, possibly just below half of a season, given you've got, as I said, Luton in fourth, Watford fifth on 44 points, Blackburn sixth on 43, then just outside the playoff places, Norwich and Millwall both on 42, Sunderland on 41, West Brom, keep an eye out for them, on 41 as well. I mean, you go all the way down to possibly Preston and Swansea down in 12th. Further down, there's been changes afoot. Let's start at the basement and work our way up a couple of places. So for Wigan, they've gone for Sean Maloney. Liam Richardson obviously was the man that took them back up into the Championship. Felt at the time his dismissal very harsh, given the facts of being back at the level and not kind of dwelling too much on the off-field stuff. Colatore took over, which in short was a very short-lived disaster. Maloney's now come in. Yes, there's that familiarity with who Sean Maloney is to Wigan fans. Is it going to be enough, though, Michael, to see them anywhere near safety?
Well, I think this is the point. And I was interested to read Wigan's statement when Torre went. They said, we are going to get the right man straight away. Maloney came out, so it was obvious they'd lined that up, they were ready to do it. But again, has he got enough experience at the position they're in and the squad of players that's there? So Liam Richardson, yes, he's done a credible job, Prots, as we know. But then the questions are asked is, could he have done more? Was he underachieving as a manager? He'll be sat there thinking, look at what, Colatore's come in. He's not got any sort of results as expected. Why didn't they keep me? It now tells you that it's not just the manager, it's the recruitment from the football club. And there was a good argument to say that they're in a worse position than when they got promoted. So you've got to look at the players that are in there. It's going to be so tough for any manager to go and turn that group round. There's fight, there's determination. But are we going to see so many changes? So for, they wanted to then play total football, they want to step through the game we've covered, Pruts, where you'll see midfield coming inside, there'll be a bounce pass and try and play as much as possible. What can Maloney come in and do different? He'll want to play. I would imagine the wider areas he'll want to create 1v1s, a bit better in press. I'm sure he'll follow Roberto Martinez, but it's going to be tough for him.
Very tough, and it's a tough game on Monday night against Blackburn. Just above them are Blackpool, who currently sit 23rd, and a familiar face has taken over there. And had to wait a little bit, of course, before he gets probably locked horns with his players in a competitive way. It's Mick McCarthy taking over from Michael Appleton. It's there, and it's from everything that you read, it's a deal that's structured until the end of the season. It's a deal to get them up and out of trouble again. So you've got Wigan 25, Blackpool 26, Huddersfield 26, and above them in 21st, you've got Cardiff 29 points. I don't know. It just seems to fit this from the sounds of it. Do you think?
What with the Mick McCarthy? You mean at Blackpool?
Yeah.
Is that your point? Do you know what you said? He's not going to be able to lock horns with his players. Well, I think that's going to happen very, very quickly. I think that has started to happen, and you know what he demands. Obviously, a lovely football man with unbelievable knowledge and experience to put through the group. Systems, setups are going to be there. Exactly, you'll know exactly what your job is. But you look around the dressing room and you say, have you got enough? When you look at the teams, it is getting tighter approach as we look. Rotherham are close by. Birmingham City, Stoke City, you've got to say, would surely have enough in that group to go and take away. So it's a tight group there. That's it's going to be tough to get over and away from that. But you know, I look at Huddersfield just above them. They're also they've made the change. They're trying to find results. It's very difficult at the bottom, but you've got a man with vast experience to give you every chance. I think that's one thing you're going to say regarding this appointment.
And just as it's very pertinent in the forefront of my mind looking at the table, Cardiff, you've got the Sabri and Sol show rolling in. You've got, obviously, Mr. Lamouchi, who we last saw at Nottingham Forest, and Sol Bamba, the man that I've not met a person that dislikes Sol Bamba, and quite rightly so. He's an absolutely gem-like human being. He's gone in there. Cardiff fans know all about him. He was part of the Cardiff side, of course, that managed to get themselves into the Premier League. Sabri Lamouchi and Cardiff... Is that a match made potentially in Welsh heaven for you?
Well, possibly. You look at that, you mentioned Sol Bamba. I always felt like there's definite role for him going forward. And Mr. Neil Warnock, who we know well, had a small link, and I'm sure that would have been part of the similar plan. But he's got his work out, hasn't he? Lamouchi, yes, he did very well with Forest at times. Question mark whether he should have left. But... it's going to be tough. You know, when you're at the bottom of the league, Puts, it's how you adapt. Do you go in, and we've seen Carlos Corberan go in and say, well, we're going to set the tone, we're going to play our way out of it. Mm. It's difficult now, you're in the situation, you go into February, what type of setup you can get to get the best out of them when you're up against it so quickly.
Certainly is one that we're all going to keep a huge eye on. Some very, very big clubs in that type of fight. Very big clubs, of course, in League One. Your fixtures for League One this weekend, Accrington, that's the way you pronounce Accrington, just so you know, Michael, they're taking on Lincoln. Fifth place, Bolton face Cheltenham. Mid-table, Bristol Rovers host MK Dons. Third place, Ipswich travel to Cambridge. Derby are fourth, and they play Wickham Wanderers. Exeter City face Charlton. Fleetwood have Burton Albion as the visitors. Duncan Ferguson and Forest Green, more on them in just a second. They are in desperate need of points. The posh heading to the Cotswolds. It's Shrews Oxford, Port Vale, Wickham, South Coast versus South Yorkshire at Fratton Park for Pompey Barnsley before undoubtedly the game of the weekend at Hillsborough as the top two face off for Wednesday against Plymouth. Now, Plymouth are at the top. They've played 28. They're on 61 points. Sheffield United are second. They've played 27 games. They're on 58 points. They've got a better goal difference. This is quite simply a clash of the titans at the very top of the league, isn't it?
I mean, it's an incredible game, isn't it? Sheffield Wednesday, obviously craving that success for such a long period of time. You can only imagine the support that they're going to get, although I don't want to say too much, but you're starting to smile, Puts, as you know it very, very well. But... Listen, you can imagine it. They're going to try and roar them all the way through to gain and promotion. And that's just the ultimate goal, isn't it? Sheffield Wednesday need to be back into that championship for sure. But colossal game. Plymouth keeps surprising everybody. Some unbelievable results. So it's a whopping game.
Do you think as well, I mean, we've seen what Steven Schumacher's done ever since he took over from Ryan Lowe with Darren Moore in at Wednesday. It's safe to say, isn't it, that there is a slightly different expectation level on these two sides. Is that why we're seeing Plymouth, who have been stretched out at the front for such a very long time, dealing with that expectation, but Sheffield Wednesday rising to the occasion under Dan? Because as you quite rightly say, it's a team that shouldn't be, I mean, along with Ipswich, Derby, Bolton, Barnsley, so many teams in that division that would quite rightly think that we're not League One, our team, we should be further up.
Well, that's the thing. You talk about the pressure that you've said, and you just look at the run of games. They've both done exceptionally well the last five or six games. So, listen, I think Plymouth are there to be shot at. Good result last time out. So I just feel... is the pressure going to be on? We're looking in many leagues, aren't we, when you don't feel like it's a club who've done it before. Are they going to be able to sustain it? Will the confidence stay? But listen, they're there on merit. And ultimately, they've been knocking on the door for a period of time of getting better results, obviously, with Ryan Lowe before.
So, obviously, speaking of better results, I mean, again, it still does box your brain when you look at the size of the clubs that are involved in Skybet League One. We've got all the way down to Pompey in 11th, a club with certainly work to do given the size of the fan base and how fervent they find that. I mean, as a former Pompey player, Michael, and given obviously they're still trying to work out what's best, who's best, they're still trying to work out the magic formula. Currently, as I said, 11th with 37 points, 6 points off the top six. What should a Pompey fan expect? Is it going to be another season, potentially, of disappointment?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, they've changed the director of football. Cino's come in. It was a real interesting appointment, wasn't it, as a young coach. I knew they wanted to coach somebody who could actually get on the grass, work with, who were prepared to work in the Pompey way with somebody above them recruiting the players. And again, I was still surprised with the level of experience that they actually went for with the amount of coaches that were out there. He had a good start. Must have been a fairy tale to get off to such a good start. Then you've had a hiccup at the weekend. You didn't get that result. And it's now how they react going forward. But again, these Pompey supporters, with that support that you've mentioned, expect to be in the playoffs. That was the goal at the start of the season. That will not change. Is it achievable? I'm just looking now, sort of six points to play, maybe a game more or so. So it is quite tight. But it is achievable, and as we know, there's some top teams in the league. But you know, this is where now this reaction, this recruitment that they've worked so hard on has to come to light.
Let's go all the way down to the team that's propping up the division. Again, another one that was dramatically changed over the course of the summer with Rob Edwards moving on to Watford. They've now got Duncan Ferguson, Forest Green, at the helm. I'm sure possibly there's part of Duncan Ferguson as well looking slightly enviously on at what's been happening at Everton, thinking he might have been the right man in the right place at the right time if it had stuck around. But obviously that's kind of by the by and a moot point. He steps forward to take charge of a team such as this. Is it going to be tough to come away from who he is and also what he could possibly be for this club? Because he's a huge name in domestic football in this country, isn't he? And given what he's done, both north of the border and obviously here down in England, will he have to focus people's minds on, this is what my football team needs to do, not necessarily, look at me, it's Duncan Ferguson?
It's going to be so difficult because you look at the run that they've in, you know, I think is it eight losses from nine, which he's taken over, a wonderful start in the game, new players coming in the door. He's got a great stature. So straight away, the respect that he's going to have in the dressing room with the players is going to be immense. Every little word. And because he's got that sort of fear factor as well, I feel like nobody's going to challenge him. So when he speaks, you're going to be listening. You're going to take note and you're going to do your job because he will change it. So a wonderful start. Late heartbreak it was for them, wasn't it? With an ending sort of 98th minute winner that they lost the game at Shrewsbury, so that was tough to take after a great start. So they've got to take positives from it, that obviously they've done quite well in the game. Yes, they didn't end up with anything, but you'd be looking at that and saying, there's a bunch of new players, we've got to work so hard on the training ground, and we have got an opportunity to do it. Again, we'd be questioning, saying, he hasn't actually managed, for all the experience he's had in coaching and playing. I think maybe that was only his fifth, sixth game in his managerial career.
And given as well who he managed to work with at Everton, some big, big name coaches, big name players, I suppose. And again, given your experience of different divisions in English football, you're looking at it, then how does he get these points across? How does he speak to players in League One, at the bottom end of League One? How does he make sure that the points he gets across are relatable and done in a way which gets everybody on board? Because I'm sure you've come across very, very, very good players that became managers that just couldn't get that message across.
Do you know the thing I would say is, if you look at certain managers and we talk about systems, coaches, where if we talk about, say, for instance, West Brom, Carlos Corberan will be asking those players to do certain things with so much detail in regards to when they step in, when they come forward, when you'd say whether your fullback would go and join in midfield, whatever that may be, or whatever that setup is, there will be lots of testing points, analysis. I would say Duncan Ferguson's approach would be a lot simpler. And I think that's going to help him with the players regards to the situation they're in, ever to pick up, to be hard to beat. I think it'll be a slightly older school approach without being it's not disrespectful, it's not changed. Seeing Sean Dyche go into Everton to go and do the same role, you're going to say it's that sort of setup that they're going to be expecting. But can those players implement what he's looking for?
We shall soon see, of course, and time will tell. Obviously, they're fighting to stay in League One, fighting to get into that division as well. League Two, these are your League Two fixtures for the weekend. Jody Morris, another big name, we're going to talk about him in a second, heads to Wales for his second game charge of Swindon. Newport, the opposition. One of the big boys of League Two, Bradford City, they face Mansfield. Third place, Carlisle, take on Harrogate Town. Some trip for Barrow as they head to Colchester with Crew facing Grimsby. Donny host Hartlepool. Second bottom, Gillingham have Crawley, and league leaders Orient have Wimbledon making the short way across to Brisbane Road through the capital. Walsall are 14th. They visit fourth place Northampton. Is this a derby? I don't know. Salford City against Rochdale. It sounds like it's in a very similar place. Answers on a postcard, please. Stockport take on Tranmere. Then second place Stevenage travel to Sutton. So let's start there then with Swindon Town and Jody Morris. Was obviously part of Frank Lampard's backroom staff at both Derby and Chelsea. They've since gone their own way. Reports kind of saying that Jody Morris is looking for the chance to break out on his own. This is that particular chance. A 3-3 draw in his first game in charge after being, if I remember rightly, 3-1 down after about 20 minutes. So very much a welcome to this division of football for Jody Morris.
Yeah, I mean, incredible, wasn't it? I actually joked at the weekend saying, did he miss the start of it? Because I think there was a great start. The goal was after like 1 minute. If he'd sat down and get him through the crowds, waiting to see how he could go on and do it. But a real entertaining game in the end, wasn't it? 3-3, crazy game. So it's a good opportunity for him, isn't it? I know he's gone for so many jobs, tons of interviews. Yeah, so quite a lot. Since obviously the Frank Lampard situation, he's not obviously joined him, which we probably thought he would have furthered his career. So he's been trying to get them. He hasn't been able to. So now it's time. What can he do? He's got his opportunity. He's got his chance. And it's going to be a big task for him. But yeah, real crazy game for him to go and watch. What he can take from that, we'll soon see.
He brought in Ed Brand as well from Chelsea's under-18s. An imperative that you have that structure around you. I know you dipped your toe into it at Port Vale, Michael, and saw the other side of it as you were coming towards the end of your career. Just give us a feel of what that difference is, because you go from it being relatively, not necessarily stress-free being a player, but not quite as precarious, is it? And then you become a coach and you become part of a staff and just, I mean, when I say workload, I mean the time spent at a football club and the demands that's placed on you. Is it a world away from when you're just running around training and playing?
Do you know what? The workload and the hours, yes, it increases, you know, tenfold. The responsibility level, it's a different professionalism. It's a different demand as a player. I think, as you know well, if you do those few hours, but you can still take that level of performance home with everything you do, your rest, your recovery. That depends on yourself, how far you want to go with it. But as a manager, you're there very, very early. You're taking a huge amount home with you. And I think even on the drive home, you're taking calls. You're mentally always involved in it at home, watching videos. And it's those day-to-day problems and that uncertainty where the phone rings when you're not expecting it with another problem. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. I really did. I couldn't get those results. And we're talking about Jody Morris going into a building. I knew what was in my building because I was already there when you get given the job. In some ways, I would have liked to go in as a fresh start with a new look on it,
yeah,
a totally different viewpoint. You might have had a different respect as well as you walk in than actually it's your mate who you've been involved with or playing with. So that's the difference for him. But it's this is a big one that he's been working for. You go and coach the youngsters, go in academies, then you get a little bit further involved, you go up to first team level. But when it's on your own shoes and your own toes, that's what you're going to be judged at very, very quickly.
And he takes over, I mean, they're in a good spot. The sixth, currently 42 points, Salford above them in fifth, Northampton, Carlisle, top two of Leighton Orient and Stevenage. Richie Wellens and Steve Evans, obviously, both still, as you were, cracking on at the very top of that. And Richie obviously knowing very well about how you get Swindon promoted out of this particular division. Then Mansfield down in seventh, Bradford in eighth on 41, Barrow ninth with 40, Stockport 10th on 39 points. If I cast our eyes a little bit further down, and you mentioned them at the very top, Hartlepool and where they find themselves, currently 22nd in the division, a busy deadline day for them. Five signings. Dan Kemp came from MK Dons, Taylor Foran came on loan from Arsenal, Brendan Kiernan from Walsall, Connor Jennings from Stockport County, and Oliver Finney, a crew midfielder. They're also huge for them. We talk about keeping key players. Josh Amira, he's stuck around. 13 goals so far this season. They fought off interest from Burton Albion. A chance there then, you feel. We talk about giving managers the opportunity, the right type of tools, for your hometown club to be as far away from the relegation players come the end of the season.
Do you know what's difficult? It's the teams around them, isn't there? Getting that financial backup, Gillingham, seeing Colchester, wonderful return of games about everybody, you know, against the teams all around them, Pruts. So at that point, you're Hartlepool United, and I feel the ownership, the chairman's gamble for such a long period of time. At the start of the season, the recruitment was very much drip-fed, wasn't really as planned as well as it should be. Keith Curl comes in, initially it's on an interim basis, and then it's okay, then we'll give you a contract when you prove your worth, but still no players coming in the door. I interviewed Keith, I did the game against Stockport where they were well beaten. I said, you need some players, you need some recruitment. He actually was quite coy and said, do you know what, we're working with what we've got, and he probably realised there wasn't going to be that many players available for them to get into the football club. So they've had a couple of poor results of late. They're really trying to get it, but all around them are making it so much tougher. Do I believe they've got a chance? I certainly hope so, and I think he's the right person for the job. But it does feel like, why are all these players coming in right at the end? It's almost Keith Curl's gone to them and said, guys, we're in big trouble here. Everybody's winning. I need help as quick as possible. But again, the wages, the deals right at the last second. Keith Curl knows his targets. He could have got people in early on in January, and they've left it extremely late. And that's one thing that concerns me slightly. They could have had a little bit of a start on it because he was in, he knew his targets, and let's hope and I pray that they do well, Hartlepool United, because when I went there on loan when I was 18, we managed to beat Darlington in a local derby, one of the best games I've ever played in, to keep them up at the bottom of League Two, Pros. It was amazing. And I'd take one of those results right at the end now for them to stay up. I just feel this would be a club that would find it really tough to come back. Yeah. I really believe that. So let's hope Keith Curl and these new signings, these a good group of players, can produce some winning performances and results soon.
We wish them all the very best, of course. And I even said to you, this was only just the other week, wasn't it, when I found out that you actually were from Hartlepool. The fact that whenever I'd come across you in our playing careers, obviously as mine was kind of meandering into the dirt and yours was taking off and going off into the sunset, I just was of a presumption that you were just born and bred Mancunian, which just goes to show how much you invested in moving over to Manchester and being consumed by the culture and the accent there.
As a 14-year-old, mate, I think when you sign for a club, you start to look forward to it. So I got that little Manchester twang, joined at 16 and continued, and still here now, just outside of Manchester. So I've certainly made it my home. But I think another couple of years, I wouldn't have got that different accent. It would have been definitely a northeast accent, but I left just in time.
And of course, if any of you have watched Michael Brown play, he was a very wonderful manipulator of a football. Also, as is needed at the very level that you played at, you have to get around the football pitch. You have to be very, very fit. And even though you've stopped playing, you've still got your sights set on something which I think is utter madness, but is done for a wonderful kind of reason and wonderful charity. You are still working your way up to marathon level fitness for the London Marathon in April. How's it going?
It's going okay. I did a long session. Yesterday was ridiculous. Too quick. I think it was 19 kilometres. I've got 17 and a half miles to do on Friday. Today was just a low-level 12K with a bit of stretching. Tomorrow's a down day, so much needed. I must be mad, but do you know what? It's for a great cause. I'm going to try it. People think it'll be easy because you've played. But don't get me wrong, in March, when I really need some support, I'll be coming for everybody. I'll be getting something out there. I'll be looking for sponsorships. So let's see if you have me back on then, because I'll be coming. Here's the link. This is what you've got to press to support it, to support the Christie's charity in Manchester, and you will be donating your wages, Prutz, when I come for you, I'm sure.
Well, that is, I mean, now that you said it and it's been committed to a podcast, if I said no, I'd be the worst human being ever. Yes. So no, I shall,
I'll keep it quiet for now. I've not started this sponsorship, any sort of promotion yet. So you've said it, but I'm keeping it a little bit more low-key because I feel another month's training, let's see how it goes before I start
still hedging your bets.
Yeah, I've just got to wait a bit longer.
No, I think it's wonderful, mate, and I do wish you all the very best with that. I mean, at some stage, I will pull my fingers out and think about something other than myself and do something.
And you can join me on one of these. You can join me on one of these runs, Brooks. That'd be great.
Well, I can follow you in a car or a bike. I saw something on social media where your wife drove past.
We could do the podcast while we're running, can't we?
See how it kind of just kind of falls apart as we run out of breath. But yeah, I was right in saying on Instagram your wife driving past and soaking you with a big puddle, didn't I?
That went down very, very well, as you can imagine. So she's gone past me. Luckily it was really wet, but the puddle literally just went right over my head, and everybody said she was very brave to do it. But you know what? As you know, Prutz, when we come up against each other on the football pitch, you can do it. But it might not be the next game. It might not be the next. But I never forget.
Okay, Marathon Man, Michael Brown, thank you so much for joining us on the official EFL podcast. Have you enjoyed yourself, mate?
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me. Hopefully it goes well. And hopefully I'll see you soon. Might be a bit stiff. I might not be able to get up on the sofa if I come and join you at some point soon, perhaps.
I'll give you a nice foot rub. We'll get you through it, mate. Don't worry about that.
I've had my rub today. Someone's come to save me for 45 minutes, so I needed that. So I might not get off this chair yet. We'll see how we get on.
There's the note to finish on. Michael Brown getting rubbed by a random person. Anyway, thanks for joining us this week on the official EFL podcast. Well, now that we've committed that to audio, he's coming for me, isn't he? I'm going to have to pay him. But what a worthy cause, of course. That's about it for this episode. A big thank you to the marathon man, Michael Brown, and Neil Critchley for joining me this week. on the official EFL podcast. As always, if you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share on all of your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's David Prutton. Thanks very much for your company. And Clem will be back same time next week for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.